From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Think about something very familiar to you, an everyday object like a mailbox on a street corner near your house. Every day you drive by that mailbox, and every day you take it for granted, just sitting there being a mailbox, as mailboxes are known to do. Except one day when you drive by, and it doesn't look like a mailbox anymore. It looks like something very different. Well, that's sort of what happened to Josh Emery, a planetary scientist at the University of Tennessee, when he and a team of colleagues studied an asteroid near the Earth. He realized that what was thought to be a very common asteroid named Don Quixote was in fact an uncommon comet. What is the difference between an asteroid and a comet when you're talking about an astronomical perspective?
Right, so the two objects were initially defined based on what you could see with your naked eye. When a comet comes, what we see is a big fuzzy head, which we call the coma, and then a long tail, sometimes two tails, but that stretch out from the back of the comet. And so it looks very much not like a star. Whereas asteroids, we don't see any asteroids with our naked eye, but when we see them through telescopes, they really look like point sources, just like stars. The only difference being that since they're orbiting our sun, they're moving relative to the stars. Physically, the difference is the coma and tail that the comets have versus asteroids not having them. Short period comets come from the Kuiper Belt. So this belt of icy bodies out beyond Neptune, of which Pluto is the largest member. And the distinguishing characteristic about these bodies as compared to asteroids is that they've got a lot of ice in them, mostly regular old water ice, like we're used to here on Earth, but also some exotic ices, carbon dioxide ice, which is dry ice, which we're also used to, but also some other carbon monoxide and methane in some cases. But when these bodies come close enough to the sun to heat up, those ices will evaporate. And that process carries dust along with it as well. And it's that sublimation process that causes the coma and the tail that we see. So it turns out that comets only have the coma and tail when they're close to the sun.
And that's what you discovered about Don Quixote was when it's orbiting a little further away from the sun, it seems to be dormant, it's dark, it's cold. When it gets closer to the sun, it begins to exhibit some of those characteristics.
That's exactly right. And for Don Quixote, that's interesting and somewhat unexpected. The reason we're interested in it for Don Quixote is because it is a member of this class of asteroids called near-Earth asteroids, so the asteroids that come close to the Earth. And most near-Earth asteroids really are rocky bodies. They come from the main asteroid belt, and they're made of rocks. But astronomers have been thinking for a while that as comets go through this sublimation process, as they come close to the sun, they lose some ices, and they go far away, and they come close again, lose some ices, that eventually they'll be depleted of their ices. And then they won't have the coma and tail anymore when they come close. So they'll just look like asteroids to us observationally. And one big question with respect to near-Earth asteroids is how many of them are rocky bodies versus how many are these extinct comets or dead comets. And that's of interest to us, especially when we start thinking about near-Earth asteroids as potential hazards to the Earth and what their effect might be when they hit the Earth and how we might protect the Earth, change the orbit of an object. All of these issues depend on what the internal strength of the body is like, and so depend on knowing whether it's rocky or fluffy like a comet.
If you and I were to land on Don Quixote at this point in its orbit, what kind of surface would we encounter? What would it look like to us?
So if we happened to be on the surface right now, we would not see jets of material streaming off the surface. We wouldn't see geysers of water vapor or anything like that. We'd see a pretty sort of pebbly, dusty-looking surface, kind of analogous to a desert landscape or a high tundra. It's very sort of fine material and kind of like that cobbly, pebbly, dusty surface.
Dr. Josh Emery is an assistant professor of Earth and Planetary Sciences at the University of Tennessee. He worked with a team who helped discover that the asteroid Don Quixote is actually a comet. Dr. Emery, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Brandon. It's my pleasure.
This week, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said it's clear that climate change is happening and that we're to blame. The report is bound to generate lots of debate, but the fact remains that no other species in history has been as effective as humans in changing the planet to fit our needs. We build dams, drill tunnels, blast our way across the continent to build highways, and construct factories that send pollutants into the atmosphere. As a species, we're very, very good engineers, so much so that writer and environmental activist Bill McKibben says we should give the planet a new name.
A scientist would say we've left behind the Holocene, the 10,000-year period of benign climatic stability. That's the only period humans know. I mean, it's where all our history takes place.
McKibben argues the Earth we know now is not the one our ancestors knew. So he proposes a new name, Earth, pronounced the same way but spelled with two A's. If you think renaming this blue marble is a bit melodramatic, well, you're not alone. McKibben supports his idea, though, with recent trends in weather, climatology, and oceanography.
If you don't trust the scientists to describe this new Earth, ask the people who work in the part of our economy that we charge with analyzing risk. That would be the insurance industry. And they'll tell you exactly the same thing, that the ground rules for this planet have begun to change.
He says storms such as Hurricane Sandy, which battered the East Coast last year, droughts, floods, and famines are becoming more common occurrences. Part of McKibben's strategy, as he talks on college campuses and in public hearings across the country, is to make climate change and other environmental topics relatable. He hopes that bringing the global argument down to the hometown level will engage his audiences and spur change.
It's clearly not okay for the rest of us to leave this task to future generations to carry out. We're the ones who've caused the problem, and it's up to us to do most of the heavy lifting.
Bill McKibben's critics accuse him of fear-mongering. In fact, a writer for Scientific American suggests his dire pronouncements may hurt rather than help his causes. McKibben says, though, he's seeing the needle move in his favor when it comes to public opinion and politics. He says Earth, the one spelled with one A, may not be too far gone to save. That's The Method from WUOT News. You can listen to this installment or any previous installment of The Method at our website, WUOT.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.